Do you think you have to have like psychic abilities in order to be able to tap into your inner divine masculine, or can anyone do it?
No, I think everyone can do it because everyone has it. It's just that we've been taught to look outside of ourselves, that we're stepping over it to, we just don't listen. I could go into this for hours, but for me, it started out with when I went to bed at night, where I was used to cuddling with my husband, telling him about my day, pouring out my heart and soul. I would go for a walk with my inner masculine and I would close my eyes and he'd be waiting for me outside of this apartment building that I lived in my dream world.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to the Joyous Path to Millions podcast with me, your host, Emily June Wilcox, multi seven-figure CEO and money healer, business mentor, and the creator of the Money Wound Medicine program. Today, we have a special guest joining us. We have Amy Lee Westervelt, and I was commenting to her before we hit record that the timing is so perfect. We're recording this on 2/22, which is an energetic portal really related to union. And Amy is many things, and I'll let her introduce herself, but I know that one of the things that she really focuses on is our relationship with the inner divine masculine and really that union of the masculine and feminine energy inside of us. So I can't think of a more perfect day for us to be having this conversation. So Amy Lee, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, Emily. Yeah, it's definitely serendipitous that we're meeting under these circumstances.
Indeed. So why don't you share a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yeah. So how to fit it all in. Okay. So my name is Amy Lee Westervelt. I am a mother of 5 children, 11 and under. I live outside of Savannah, Georgia, and I am originally from Boston, Massachusetts. So if you hear a little bit of an accent, that's why. And I am a crossroads mystic. So there's lots of different kinds of mystics. I think of us as we're like mediators between the different like positions, right? So there's like witches who are like, I dabble in the occult. And then there's like the theologians, and the mystics kind of are like the middle player. They're like, we don't really take an opinion. We listen, and our truth is ever evolving. So that's what a mystic is. And I'm a crossroads mystic, which means that I support women, specifically women, when they're like coming out of their 3D awareness and they're like, okay, there's more. I know there's more to this life. I know there's more to reality. I need someone to help me navigate that. So that's what I do. And specifically, I work with the idea of divine union, which is connecting with the inner other, in our case, with our inner masculine, in men's case, with their inner feminine. And yeah, that's what I do. So that's who I am.
And I imagine that there's been like a journey to get to this place. Like I find with entrepreneurs, it's so rare that we're like, okay, great. And when I graduate high school, I'm going to be a crossroads mystic and help women reconnect to their inner masculine. So did you always know that you were interested in entrepreneurship, or what has your journey looked like?
I think from a very young age, I knew that I was here to change the world. I was here to support people. I kid around. It's not really kidding around, but when I was like 3, I thought that I was the Messiah. Like I was like, there's this person coming back to save the world. Maybe it's me. And so I've always had a heart for changing the world, creating more wholeness, and really just like bringing that unity consciousness to the planet. I started out, I did all kinds of different jobs. I was one of those unemployable people that just constantly filled out a W-2, did something for a couple months, realized that I pissed someone off and had to leave, right? So I never got fired, but I never made it far enough to be fired, I don't feel like. And then I got into, I'm sure we'll get into this as we talk, but I got into network marketing later. And then once I really always wanted to be a visionary. And so that was the beacon for me when I was in network marketing. And then if you know anything about network marketing, sometimes companies are like, oh, we want to be the beacon. We don't want you to teach people how to be their own beacon. So parted ways with them, became a coach. And yeah, so I think that divine union is one of those things that it finds you. Just real quick, my husband was fasting at the time, and we have a very connected relationship. We have a leader support relationship where the dynamic is very strong. And when he went and did this water fast, all of a sudden he wasn't available. So you're like so deep in your feminine and so connected and so surrendered. And then it's just kidding. Like you're talking to a brick wall. So he had gone within so much because he was doing this fast. And I went a little crazy. I'm not going to lie. I went a little crazy and I was like, okay, I'm not going to cheat on him. And I'm not going to go find somebody else to be with, but I need that masculine energy. So I almost created it. I had an imaginary friend and I started to really talk to this friend. And the more I realized that I was talking to this energy, the more I realized I wasn't making it up. It wasn't imaginary at all. And that's when I accidentally discovered this divine masculine energy that started downloading your woo like me, right? So downloading all this beautiful awarenesses and energies and things that I didn't realize. And sure enough, I went and checked these ancient texts and they're all there. Things that I never would have known. So that's how I stumbled into it. And I've been supporting my clients with it. And it's just been absolutely mind-blowing. What happens when you stop making the things outside of you, the external factors make the difference between making or breaking you? It's a totally different experience, honestly.
I love that so much. And I'm curious, when you were on this exploration and starting to get to know your own inner divine, what did it look like? Like, what were the conversations? Was it a feeling? Do you think you have to have like psychic abilities in order to be able to tap into your inner divine masculine, or can anyone do it?
No, I think everyone can do it because everyone has it. It's just that we've been taught to look outside of ourselves, that we're stepping over it to, we just don't listen. I could go into this for hours, but for me, it started out with when I went to bed at night, where I was used to cuddling with my husband, telling him about my day, pouring out my heart and soul. I would go for a walk with my inner masculine and I would close my eyes and he'd be waiting for me outside of this apartment building that I lived in my dream world. And we would go for walks in my dreams and I would tell him all the things that were going on for me and he'd give me advice and he'd tell me what he thought I should do differently or he'd support me. And I found that when I woke up in the morning, I couldn't wait to meet with him again. So eventually I was like, hey, are you still here? He's like, yeah, where was I going to go? And I'm like, wait, so you don't say goodbye when we get up in the morning? And he's no, you say goodbye. I thought you were the one who had to leave. And so then we started to really just have more conversation. And I was like, hey, this is what I'm thinking about doing in my business. What do you think? And he's, this is a good idea, but I would be careful of this. And sure enough, that would be something that I hadn't thought of. And so really like allowing him to take the reins more in the business side of my life just really made such a difference because I could lean back. And then by the time my husband came back from his fast, I was a whole different woman. I was not like, hey, babe, are you going to come to bed? Are we going to hang out? Are we going to fool around or whatever it was? It was like, oh, hey, how's it going? And I was so filled up from inside that everything with him was a bonus. And so he's, are you okay? Are you mad at me? I'm like, no, not at all. And he's like, do you want to watch a movie? Can I take you out? Can I? And so like all of a sudden, it just became so much more of everything around me, not just my husband, but everything around me just coming to me. People in my DMs like, hey, I want to work with you. It's time. Instead of, hey, so tell me about your programs or just wishy-washy. After a while, it was just like, so I know I want to work with you and I just need to know the best way to do it. And I'm like, what is going on? I made a reel about this yesterday. My husband literally walks me to my treadmill in the morning when we go to the gym, because everybody needs to know this is my woman. You're not like, I don't want anyone getting any ideas. It's a very different energy than say a year ago when it'd be like, all right, see you later. And women don't realize they try so hard to be enough, to wear enough makeup, to get young enough, to be all these products and all these things. When the truth is, when they connect to this sacred masculine lover, they're so filled up from the inside out that everything else is a bonus. And now their partner's, wait, you don't need me anymore? And so now they're looking for all the ways to make themselves relevant. And it's just a beautiful energy and it's not manipulative at all, which is lovely because a lot of the things, divine feminine things tend to be very manipulative. So I don't even know if that answered your question. I feel like maybe it did, but
I think there was so many great things there and I didn't know the conversation was going to take us in this direction, but like I had a light bulb moment, even just in recent years, let's say within the last 5 years of realizing that like, oh, I'm not responsible for my husband's sexual satiation. And nor is he me. And it's that's especially as women, that's actually what we're conditioned to believe that it's like, oh, if he's in the mood, then it's like my responsibility to take care of that. And I think what you're saying, it's really energetic. It's not just about sexual energy, but it's like when we realize, oh, I'm the one who's responsible for me and I'm going to make sure that my cup is full. I'm going to make sure that I'm satiated. Then it's weird because you think that what's going to happen is it's going to make everything else irrelevant, but it doesn't. It's actually everything else is even better because the vibration of need or the vibration of codependence is pretty low on the energetic scale, whereas the vibration of just like desire and want and I'm in abundance, I'm taken care of, but when I'm with you, it feels even better. It's even extra. It just elevates everything.
It does. And I love that you brought up the piece about codependence, because that is what's bred into us, right? If we can become so toxically enmeshed with each other, then we're consistently dependent on the system to support and recover before we go back and become in that toxic enmeshment again. So what the process that we go through in my work, which is called energetics or pertaining to life force energy, we create this wholeness within. So by the time we get to that partner, instead of it being like two pieces of broken china making one teacup, we've got two beautiful whole beings that are like, what can we do now? We're still in that dating, fun, like vibrant, bouncy energy of, even though we have five kids, even though our house is a hot mess, even though we have all these things to do, it's okay, how can we continue to exist in the mystery while still being in this intimate partnership? And that's really what divine union is, because there are things that I share with Eros, my inner masculine, that I don't necessarily share with my husband. And then, because you ever try to like, you want to vent about your husband, but the only person that's like your bestie is your husband. So it's like, how do I vent about you to you? But there have been times we've been on walks together where I've had full-blown out loud conversations with my inner masculine in front of my husband, and it's fine. Like I will just literally sit there and talk to him, and he's, oh, that's interesting. But it doesn't threaten him in any way, because you are a much better wife. You're way hotter. You're way more fun to be with when you have this in your life. So why would I compete with that?
Yeah. And you mentioned a few different times, like going on walks and talking to your inner masculine. Does that tend to be the way that you connect the best? Or if someone's listening to this for the first time and they're like, okay, this is weird, but I'm also curious and I'm interested in doing it, could they just be literally sitting at their desk ready to make a business decision and go inward and ask and then feel for the answer or hear the answer? What kind of guidance would you give them?
Yeah, that's a good question. I definitely think that they could. Do I think that they would believe it was possible? Not necessarily. I don't think most people will sit down and actually take the time to, okay, like I'm genuinely asking for an answer. And so that's why in my process, I've created this three-step process where it starts with devotion. If you've had this person who's been at your beck and call, who's been trying to love and take care of you your whole life, and you've literally stepped over them, and then one day they got hot, right? The kids in Harry Potter and how they like all of a sudden got hot, and it's like, ooh, sorry that like I used to think you were weird looking. You're probably going to come with your tail between your legs and be, hey, so I was wrong. And so building in that part of, before you ever ask for anything, before you even try to get into this sacred relationship, there's a little bit of a mea culpa that has to happen, I think. And so for me, really the first piece was devotion, just showing up to be with him for months at a time, just literally going for walks, talking, getting like showing up and acknowledging that I want to be part of this relationship. Now, from an esoteric perspective, this is the playing out of the duality of the soul. So we have this illusion, you and I, that we're females and then there's males and whatever. And I'm all female. And a lot of people will tell you're all female. But in your soul self, there's a duality that exists. There's two parts of you, one of which is the feminine, which is the outward expression, and one of which is the masculine, which is the inner expression. And if you look at those two in duality, when you animate one, so if you have two cars and you can only drive one at a time, you own them both, but you can't put them both on the road at the same time. The same thing with your inner masculine. You are both your feminine and your masculine, but you can only animate one at a time. So when you're operating from your feminine, you're operating in this energy of surrender, of letting go, of being aware that you are the muse. You are the creator. You are the one that designs things. If you really want to get technical with it, you're the one who put the stripes on the zebras. You're the one who put the stars in the sky. You're the one who decorated the things. Like that was you from a collective consciousness perspective, right? And then when you flip over to animating the masculine, now you get to see the perfection of the feminine. Now you get to see the essence and the beauty and the discovery and all of that innocence of the feminine, but you can't be both of them at once. While we're talking to this energy, yes, you could absolutely sit there. In fact, if I say to you, Emily, go in your head right now and say, hey, inner masculine, are you there? You're probably going to hear something like that. Yeah. Absolutely. But are you going to feel comfortable giving him the reins to your business? Probably not. Are you going to feel comfortable with what he says being the gospel and you going, oh, okay, that's what I'm going to do? Probably not. But had you been in devotion, had you been sitting with him for a while and listening to him and hearing all the ways that he's, hey, remember when this happened? Here's how I thought of that. And you're starting to build that collective energy and really that trust and that surrender, then yeah, you probably would start to create a relationship, I think.
So the first step is devotion. And then what are the other two steps of the process?
So then after you go through devotion and you're like, okay, we're going to do this, like it's like a courtship, like getting ready for marriage, then the next step is connection. And this is one of my favorite parts because this is where you really, you can dig into the astrology. You can see what his astrological sign is. You also look at what your relationship sign is and really just getting to know who he is and the nuances of how he operates and how you experience him. So for me, my inner masculine is Capricorn. So he's Mr. Dom. He's, did you drink your water? Did you do this? Guess what? If you don't do this, you're not having this. There's a lot. And again, there's a trust there because we built that. Like he didn't start on day one, hey, you're not doing this. There's a very different connective energy in the connection phase. And so it's getting to know each other. What's your favorite color? What's your favorite color? And really recognizing that you've been connected to this energy since before you were ever born. Mm-hmm. A lot of us call it God. A lot of us call it Sky Daddy. And it's like this energy of this force that dotes on us, right? Like people call it the lucky girls and oh, the universe loves me. Yes. And the universe is in love with you. The universe is devoted to you. You are the bride, the queen of this energy. It's not about you're a sweet little thing and I want to take pity on you. It's about like you are the muse. Without you, I cannot create existence. I can't manifest it if you don't dream it. And so it's a co-creative relationship. It's very symbiotic. And so that's what happens during the connection phase.
Beautiful. So devotion, connection, and then what's our third step?
The third one is my favorite. The third one is integration. So once you recognize that you guys are ready and you want to do this, you want to go down the aisle, right? That's where integration happens. And you start to talk about it like pre-Cana classes in Catholicism, like who's going to do what job? Who's going to be responsible for what? And then when you're ready, you actually go into vows and you create that sacred union and you recognize for now and forevermore in this lifetime and maybe hopefully in others that I'm going to play this role, that I am the queen to the king and I've chosen this as my king. And in choosing him as my king, there's, like I said, there's a surrender that happens. There's a whole surrender prayer that you have. There's, I don't know if you've ever read any of Tosha Silver's work, but she talks about change me prayers. Change me into one who can. Change me into one who can. So this is the energy of lead me, guide me, right? The sacred masculine is all about the leadership. He wants to create the container. He wants to make you feel protected. He wants to make you feel seen and safe and held. But he can't do that if you're not open to receiving, if you're not open to leaning into the essence of his love, of his devotion. And so that's what happens during the integration phase. And that's when you become a dyadic energy that has both the sacred masculine and the feminine, recognizes who comes forward, who goes back, and so on and so forth, and stop trying to do each other's jobs. It's not about being stuck in your masculine anymore than you wouldn't say, I'm stuck in my husband. You're like, no, I'm just trying to do the thing that he does. Can you imagine like, trying to do his job at work? Like you wouldn't do that. It's the exact same thing.
This is fascinating. I'm so happy you're sharing all of this with us. So let's pivot a little bit and talk about money. Although it's not really a pivot because I know it's so deeply connected, but I'd be curious to just, if you could rewind with us a little bit and share how your money journey has changed and evolved, like from bouncing around from job to network marketing, to stepping into coaching, and now really finding, I think, your calling, your sort of niche and within the coaching industry as well.
Yeah, great question. So I think starting with when I was younger and I was doing a million different jobs, I think it was more of an ends to a means kind of thing. Pay my electric bill, not pay my electric bill, pay my insurance, my car insurance, pay for my license plate, whatever, pay to go out to eat. It was never, there was never any wealth building. There was never any need for that. And there really wasn't any fear about money. Like I really just didn't have that. And then as I got married the second time, because honestly, up until after my divorce, I really didn't have any. It was like, okay, I need to make money. I've got it. I'm a pretty natural manifester. I am a 5-2 sacral generator. And so manifesting is pretty easy for me, like just in general without trauma, but trauma's coming. Don't worry. So once I got married again, my husband was in the military. I was a stay-at-home wife. So making money was like not my problem. It was fantastic. But also I recognized that there was a little less money than there was like month. And my husband paid exorbitant child support for his children that he had before we ever had children. So I had to get creative. So I did things like couponing and I tutored and I did these fun things, but they were more like, ooh, let me see how I can help. But it wasn't my responsibility. Mm-hmm. When we moved to Alaska, which was one of our duty stations, I was like so done with the military lifestyle. It was negative 60 degrees. You could pour water in the air and it would evaporate. It was just not the vibe. And I went to my husband and I was like, hey, I don't want to do this anymore. Not you. I love you, but I don't want to do this. And he's, you've got to figure out how to make what I think it was $4,000 a month we were making at the time with COLA and everything. Like that's what we were making. And I was like, done. And I had no idea how I was going to do that. And that was the first time. It was completely aspirational. It was all about the law of attraction. It was about manifesting. I brought all of those old things that I had played with in college, you know, the way like, oh, I got a free new wardrobe or not free, but I got a new wardrobe and I got front row seats to the fray. And like, I got my dream job. Like I played in the world of manifestation. So we were playing again. My husband had his beautiful salary while we were figuring out getting him out of the military. And I got into network marketing very early on. I'd never really had a real foray into it, but I was going at it from the law of attraction piece. I was like, this is the vehicle. I'm going to make these amazing things happen. I'm going to create this. It's beautiful. Just young, dumb, whatever, all that. So I think it took about 90 days for us to hit that $4,000 a month mark when I got into this network marketing. And my husband said, wouldn't it be great if we could make 20 grand? And I'm like, why would you say that? We had a good thing going. That's too much. No one makes 20 grand a month. And then we made 20 grand a month. And then it was save 60,000 for taxes. And lo and behold, all of the time that we spent in this network marketing company was like $1.7 million that we made. And it was effortless. When I say effortless, I mean like the law of attraction was on my side. I was loving on people. I was visionarying. I was doing all these things. And I felt like that money was so clean.
Yeah.
Come to find out, this network marketing company that I was in, there were some things that were going on behind the scenes. And also just when people are making money and other people aren't, people say things and people feel things. And so it started to become, oh, you're making that money off the backs of other people and you're making that money. You screwed people over to get to where you were. Now, I didn't. I do know that there were some people who did. And I also know the company did some very unethical things. Whatever. It doesn't matter what company it is because I probably have some NDA that I signed somewhere. It started to really crumble that beautiful, clean, squeaky clean feeling of the money that I had manifested. Now suddenly I had manifested money that was people losing their houses and mortgages and all that. And again, that wasn't my downlines. Like I was not doing unethical things, but other people were, and they put us all together. They made documentaries about the company. It was like this whole thing. So I ended up getting out of that company for that reason. And because they stopped allowing me to do the visionary work that I wanted to do. They didn't want me to teach about the law of attraction. They wanted me to tell people that the company was what built them. But the truth was, we built the company. I was one of the ones who built it. I was one of the ones who helped them get to $1 billion status. So I had to make a decision and I left and I was making nothing and I started up my coaching business. And I think that's really where the trauma started, because now all of a sudden my husband's out of the military. I'm not making $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $70,000 a month anymore. And everything's on me. And not only is everything on me, but the lifestyle we built from this life before is still here. And I've got to sustain that. It's not just, yes, we bought a house and we put a lot of equity into it, but it has $3,000-$5,000 air conditioners that if one of them craps the bed, what do you do? And so that was the beginning of the trauma piece of it, because I felt like making a lot of money was hurting someone in some way. And so that kind of began the process. But also I went to another network marketing company after that, just because I liked their product and I was enjoying their stuff and I wanted to get a discount. The other company came after me and sued me, and the IRS came and said that we owed all this money. And then like all these things, because they don't teach you in network marketing how to build a business. They just oh, look, here's a lot of money. Spend it by the end of the month so that you're still on the hook for us. Like that's really what it's all about. And at least in that company it was. And yeah, that trauma just kept piling on and piling on. And even though when my coaching business up like recently, probably in the last year, I was making six figures easily, but I was still having trouble paying the bills. I was still like, how is it that we're on the 13th of the month and we're out of money? Like, I don't understand. And there was so much shame behind that, that there was something that I was mismanaging. I wasn't living an exorbitant lifestyle. I wasn't taking my kids to Disney every day. I didn't know where it was going. And then one day I woke up and went, wait a minute. This doesn't have anything to do with how much money I'm making. It has to do with how I feel about the money I'm making. And then when I made that shift, it was like, oh, okay, so how I'm beating myself up is actually the problem. And so that's, I don't know, it's probably been about 6 months since that happened. I'm still doing very well, but I don't feel that like feeling anymore.
And I think what you describe, it's so common. Like, even if you're six figures is a weird thing because it is a lot of money and it's not a lot of money at the same time. That's the thing. And like, same, we live in Southern California. If we only made one six figure and not multiple six figures, like, we would have a problem. But it's like in business too, it's different. It's not, you're not, every dollar you make isn't available to spend. Like, you need to set aside money for taxes. You need to, if you're paying for mentorship or if you have a virtual assistant or anything, it's like there are expenses and all of the income isn't predictable. And so it's, even if you have clients that are on longer term contracts, like, something could change with that client too, and like their ability to pay. And I think it's so common to have financial anxiety and like to see on paper that you're making an amount of money that seems like everything should work, but not feeling like it all works the way that you want it to, and then feeling this weird in between. And I think one thing, especially in the coaching industry, that makes it trickier is a lot of people feel like, I can't talk about that because then I'm not going to be seen as successful and clients won't want to work with me. And so then it becomes like a secretive, shameful thing when it's actually such a shared experience of entrepreneurship.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And it's true. And I did hide it for a really long time. And then in October, I made a post about it on my Instagram and it blew up. Like, everybody was like, oh my God, this is so amazing. This is so transparent. And it was because I did the We Have Food at Home challenge because I just wanted to see how much money we were spending on going out to eat and on convenience stores. It's so easy. Like, kids go to karate, there's a Circle K next door, so go grab nuts or whatever. So in the month of October, we didn't do any of that. We had gone on two vacations. I went on one in September and then the kids and I went on one and my husband. And it made doing this challenge made me feel so poor. I wasn't allowed to go to certain places. And it was the most money traumatizing thing. And I don't feel like they saved any money.
So like, wait, I've never heard about this challenge. So essentially, it's you don't eat out at all. Anytime your kids ask for something, you say, we have food at home.
Yeah, you don't eat anything that you don't prepare or buy from the store and bring home to prepare.
Got it. Okay. So it made you interesting. So you felt like you didn't save any money and it made you feel poor because like you couldn't do the things you wanted to do.
Well, yeah, it wasn't so much that we couldn't do the things that we wanted to do, but like we looked at it at the end of the month and we're like, we didn't have the extra money to spend on food. What did we even do? You know what I mean? What would we have done if we had done the things that we did? It was like we had shrunk in our money container inadvertently because we were limiting ourselves. Mm. It was the poorest I've ever felt in my life. I'm not going to lie. It was literally, we probably spend, I don't know, $500-$600 on between going out to eat and, like I said, going to the convenience stores and stuff like that. Dunkin' Donuts is a big thing for me, never giving that up. But we didn't have, at the end of the month, okay, we saved $400. We were like, shit, how are we going to pay the phone bill? You know what I mean?
I got it. So your feeling was, energetically, we were like tapped into lack and scarcity. And so rather than it being like, oh, we saved all this money, it was like, oh, we decreased our expenses and at the same time decreased what we were receiving, perhaps even more so than we decreased our expenses. Okay, so then you wrote a post about that and had a lot of people resonating.
So many people resonated with it. They were just like, wow, just hear you say this, thank you. There was so much thank you. And I'm like, why not? When you recognize that you are not your money and you recognize that it doesn't define you. And I think this is really hard too, because the generation before us, they would define us by our money. Like they very much lived a very different life. When as a, what am I? A zennial, I guess is what I'm called. I'm like stuck between Gen X and millennial, right? I was born in 82. So very much like that stuck in the middle energy. And I think one of the problems is we espouse certain values, but we judge ourselves by the values of our elders. So that gap between what I believe and what I judge myself on is where suffering happens. And I feel like when it comes to money, there's so, like, my mother to this day, I hope she doesn't watch this, but my mother to this day is like, why don't you get a little job so you can have benefits? And I'm like, Mom, benefits for what? Like, we don't even have health insurance. My son does because he's on Medicaid because he's special needs and he's on Social Security.
Yeah.
But everybody else, if we have a problem, we'll walk our asses to urgent care. We'll drive to urgent care, whatever. Like, I go to the eye doctor once a year and it's $186 versus paying $1,300 in case something, I guess if something happens, I'll deal with it, but I would have to deal with it anyway. You know what I mean? Or she's like, why don't you just go do DoorDash? I'm like, Mom, there isn't, when you get to what we're doing, you become unemployable. Can you imagine making $18 an hour? And God love anyone who does, but for me, like, that won't do anything. I can't trade an hour of my life for $18 an hour. I just can't do that. And that generation doesn't understand that. And so even though we don't agree, we still are getting that chastising from them. And we're still feeling bad about it. And I think that's a really big piece of the money puzzle.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think, like, their orientation around safety and security is pretty fixed around that it's safest to have a job or have that, like, DoorDash would feel safer than coaching. And so Jeff and I have had similar kinds of things where his parents for a while, like, just didn't think he worked, but it was because they just didn't understand the work that he was doing and he didn't have a boss. And so it was like, oh, that's so fascinating that, like, their interpretation is, oh, you're not working. And I think, like, they thought, I don't know, that he was living off of me. I had a corporate job at the time or whatever. We've bumped up against a few of those things. And so it's true. I never thought about, like, that you have different values, but that you might still judge yourself through the lens of your elders, which, I mean, of course makes sense because our inner child wants nothing more than the love and approval of our parents.
Mm-hmm. And that's when your inner other steps in and says, baby, fuck them. You've got me.
I love that. That's amazing.
It happens more often than you think.
So since you had this shift, I think you said, like, in the last 6 months, you shame busted how you were feeling about money. And obviously you've also had this shift in your business as you've really stepped into your power and this methodology that you've developed. What does money look like now and how does it feel?
I'm not going to lie to you and tell you that I've suddenly expanded my income tremendously, but it has absolutely improved. Since that month that happened, I haven't had any of those oh shit moments where I'm like, oh my God, where's this money going to come from? We've definitely had a surplus at the end of every month. We haven't gotten to the point where we're like putting it away or anything. We're like, it's just paying next month's bills. And so maybe it's all just paying it forward. I don't know. But definitely that feeling of having to hit rock bottom and then come back up and that adrenaline junkie thing has definitely subsided a lot. And then I don't have that scary feeling when letters come in the mail. Because with the IRS, you just never know what they're going to send you. And so for me, like, I know finding out that I owed them $90,000 because someone did my taxes wrong was a scary thing. But now it's, if that comes, that's a piece of paper that's auto-generated by a computer. I used to feel this energy of if we missed a payment on a credit card or something, that everyone, like, got on the loudspeaker, were like, attention, please. Emily Westervelt is late on her card.
Right.
Please find the picture of her in your drawer, put it on your dartboard and throw a dart at her eye. It's not personal. And really understanding that money is not personal made such a difference to me. So now it's, okay, what can I do to generate this? Or, like, how can I, what is it? What do I even want this for? Do I just want to make a bunch of money because I can? Or do I want to give these dollars a job? And when I look at it from the perspective of, am I just creating this because I need it to add to my worth or to make me feel good enough? That's not the vibe that's going to bring money. But if it's like, oh, like, I can create this service, I can help people in this way and be compensated energetically, then it feels like the money just shows up.
I love that. Yeah. And I'm going back to the contrast of you being in network marketing and the money just going up and up, but also the expenses going up and that kind of rat race culture, in a sense, like, even though you weren't in corporate, which is how we normally talk about rat race, like, it seems like they just recreated that, which was, like, to keep you chasing, to keep you in motion, to keep you trying to hit bigger goals. And then all of a sudden, all of that went away. And then you're building a new stream of revenue. I'm curious, did you have to make lifestyle adjustments in accordance with that? Was there any reckoning as far as, okay, here's what actually matters to us as a family? Tell me about that experience.
I think that when we were making all kinds of money, there was a lot of abdication going on. There was a lot of, oh, I want this thing. How much is it? Great. That's how much it is. Let's throw money towards that. So we made a lot of dumb decisions that I will tell you about offline because they're just not anything anybody ever needs to hear. But we made some dumb money decisions. We bought dumb things. Luckily, we made good, big decisions. Like we bought our car in cash. We put a giant amount of equity down in the house so that we wouldn't have to pay private mortgage insurance. So we did a lot of good things. We bought a couple Disney timeshares, which ended up being great places to stash money for COVID. And we were like, okay, we don't need these anymore, but we do need the money. So that was really good. But I think once we weren't making that kind of money anymore, we lost the luxury of abdicating. We were no longer able to just be like, oh, that seems like it'd be good. Like now we had to really be serious about it. We couldn't take the same liberties that we could, but that was probably a good thing in the long run.
Right.
We used to have our house cleaner and we had all these bougie things, but we didn't do a good job of telling them what we really wanted them to do. And they probably weren't. We had one person who cleaned our house and we noticed the house wasn't getting clean. And it turned out my husband actually had cameras that were outside of the house because I told you our neighbors sued us over our dogs barking. And my husband had to get video of the dogs and prove that they really hadn't barked as much. So we had exterior shots and this girl would leave the house as soon as we left and not clean the house and then come back before we left. So she wasn't even cleaning the house. She was some girl that like lived in our neighborhood or whatever. So my husband showed her these videos and she's, I can't believe that you would accuse me of that. And we're like, but these are the kind of things that we didn't vet people. We didn't do background checks. We didn't do what, because it was just like, we have the money. If it doesn't work out, we'll just throw more money at it. We had a guy come be our housekeeper in our first house and he accidentally left his medicine at our house. And let's just say that he had things going on that were probably not needing to be around my children. And heaven forbid he left bodily fluids on my toilet or whatever. And so These are the kind of things that we were no longer able to do. Mm-hmm. But did we have to downsize the house? No, we still live in this giant money pit of a house. No, it's gorgeous. I love my house. We definitely still eat the same foods. We didn't have to sell things. So it's been very good that way. But yeah, we couldn't like burn money in the fireplace anymore.
Yeah, totally makes sense. And I was just listening to, it was a Catherine Zenkina podcast, and she was talking about a question that she asks herself, which is, will I be proud of this purchase in a year? And she asks herself that before she makes purchases. And I think that's like such a beautiful question because it just adds more intentionality into your transacting with money. And if the answer is yes, you do it. It's not like I have to follow this strict budget and I really want this thing, but I can't have it. But it gives you enough thoughtfulness that you're not just throwing away money that you won't even remember in a year, or in a year you'll think it was a stupid decision and you could have invested it or done something different with it. So it sounds like that's the kind of stuff you got rid of, was the stuff where if we said, Amy Lee, will you be proud of this purchase in a year? And you're like, no, I would not. And now I don't spend my money on that stuff.
And some of that stuff I'm still trying to get rid of. If anybody's on Poshmark, please come and buy all the things because they're all on there. Get them out of my house. There've been a lot of things we just took to Goodwill because we bought... Just to give you an example, when we were in the network marketing company, everybody wore Freebirds, right? The like Steve Madden Freebird shoes. They're like $400 a piece. And I had 15 pairs of them. Who knows why? And who would ever wear that many? And they're not even that comfortable. I'm sorry, Steven. And so I got rid of so many. Like that was my whole closet. I had like teaks in every color. Like it was just things like that. Alex and Ani bracelets all the way to your elbow. Like it was just silly stuff that we would purchase. And after a while, it's okay, you don't have the luxury of buying this stuff anymore. And that's good. Yeah. It really, honestly, it was. And it made us, like I say, like you said, more intentional.
Yeah. I think you start to realize like what luxury means to you.
Yeah.
And whenever I say things for myself, I always give the caveat, this could change, but it's right now, I'm not a luxury person. I'm not even a purse person in general. Like, I'll buy the Target purse and I'll wear it until the pleather starts to crack and look terrible. And then I'm like, oh, time for one new one.
If it can't fit in a clutch that's this big, then I don't need it. If it's, if it doesn't fit in the little wristlet, I'm not interested. Right.
Yeah. So it's good to know that about yourself. It's like, I'm wearing a really cute moonstone ring instead of my actual wedding ring, which is safely stored in our home. but it's like luxury jewelry isn't really it for me. But like an amazing meal or concert tickets or travel, like those are things that, you know, we really invest in pretty heavily because that does do it. We really enjoy that. And it would feel like lack if we didn't have that stuff. So
like we have food at home.
We have food at home. That's so interesting. I've never heard of that challenge before, but
you're gonna see it everywhere now though.
Probably. Yep, now that it's in my awareness. Could talk to you all day. And I'm guessing that everyone listening is like wondering where to connect with you and where to learn more about this work. So can you share the best ways to reach out with you and get to know your work better?
Yeah, absolutely. So one way is on Instagram, the Amy Lee Westervelt, pretty self-explanatory. Or you can go to my website, which is amyleewestervelt.com. There is a whole 5-day energetics course that you can take that's free that will walk you through some of these concepts and a little bit about divine union and building divine union. So you can check that out. There might be other freebies on there. I don't know. Depending on when you're listening to this, we're doing all kinds of upgrades on the website. There's all kinds of stuff on there. Just go play.
Amazing. I want to sign up for that too. So I'm going to go play. All right. Final question. What does it look and feel like to you to be on your joyous path to millions?
Back to millions, right? Back to millions. I would say it looks like letting money be clean again, like letting myself feel like I've called this in. And if it had adverse effects to someone, which maybe I do or don't know, that's not on me. Like people make decisions for whatever. If I decide to join another network marketing company, which I'm not swearing off forever, recognizing that decisions people make just because I'm at the top doesn't mean that I have sinister feelings or motivations. That's the word for that money. So for me, it's about really recognizing that I know who I am. And there's always going to be somebody who tries to tell me that they know who I am, and being able to just stay resonant with the awareness that I am, as my inner masculine would say, already perfect. And so being able to hold that energy and to any money that comes into my world to just feel like, you know what, I'm embracing this and I deserve it. And it doesn't mean I took it from someone. It doesn't mean that someone has less because I have some. It means that it's a healthy circulation of energy. So that's what it looks like for me.
Amazing. Thank you so much for coming on the show. To everyone listening, thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll talk to you soon. Okay, I feel like I learned so much during that interview. I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. You can tag Amy Lee at the Amy Lee Westervelt on Instagram. Tag me at M Makes Money. Let us know that you listen. Here were my top takeaways. Number one, just the dualistic nature of our energy. I know it. I know about the divine masculine and the divine feminine, but the way that Amy talked about it, she used just different language and different visuals that really helped me understand it at a deeper level. Number two, discovering your inner other and really choosing to be in relationship with him or whatever pronouns you choose to use. Number three, not looking to the external for guidance or validation. And so recognizing the places where we go to our spouse or our boss or our coach and or our parents even, and we're looking for that guidance and that validation and learning to cultivate that within. Number four, scarcity consciousness begets more scarcity consciousness. So I thought it was fascinating her story about the There's Food at Home challenge, and that what should have led to more abundance because they were saving money actually led to more scarcity because that was the vibration that they were on and they felt poor while they were doing the challenge. And so what do you know? It led to not as much money coming in. And I think that's something that we can all use as a cautionary tale because it's so much about how you feel more than it is what actions you're taking. And then takeaway number five is that how much we make doesn't define us. And that's something that I talk about here on this show as well, but I love it when I hear it in a new way or it's reiterated because, listen, there's people who don't come on this show because they're not willing to talk about money. And there's people who come on the show, but there are certain things that they're not willing to share. And so there's questions that I have to dance around or ask it in a specific way. And it's all because of money mindset. and old stories and old rules about what's appropriate and what's inappropriate. And so the more we can realize that how much we make doesn't define us, and it's not the most important or most interesting thing about us, it's just one piece of things, the better. So as always, thank you so much for tuning into the show, and I will see you next week.
Listeners like you have made this a top 3% global podcast. So thank you so much for tuning in. Please like, subscribe, share, and leave a review. I also love hearing listener feedback, so feel free to slide into my DMs on Instagram at @mmakesmoney. If you would like to explore hiring me as your money healer and business mentor, hit the link in the show notes or head to explore.emilywilcox.com. Until next time, I'm sending you all the magic money vibes on your joyous path to millions.